What do you mean by the title, God Save Benedict Arnold?
Well, I have a little story, kind of a historical what-if in the book as to what if Benedict Arnold, who wanted to serve in the American Navy and was never given the opportunity, that if he had been in the Navy, he might have not had these moments of idleness that turned into treason, and he would have been a hero, and we would have been saying, God save America, God save Benedict Arnold. I think it's also the idea that he was a hero, he was a villain, and leave the judgment to others and just look at who he was. So that's why I said, let God sort it out. My name is Jack Kelly. I'm the author of a book that's just come out called God Save Benedict Arnold, the true story of America's most hated man. I've been interested in the Revolutionary Era for a long time. I have two other books that deal with various aspects of the Revolution. And I've always been fascinated by Benedict Arnold, not only his achievements during the war, his very crucial and dastardly treason that he committed, and then his reputation, which is, has gone up and down and is really in many ways a distorted history as we've gone along, as people have tried to come up with reasons for why Benedict Arnold committed treason, and was he treasonous all along, and did he really have achievements? He's a problematic character, but I think one of the most interesting characters in the Revolutionary War era.
This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. Joining us is Jack Kelly, author of God Save Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold committed treason, yet our guest, Jack Kelly, argues Arnold had achievements, too, during the early years of the Revolutionary War. One of the most successful soldiers of the period. He was a Connecticut native, as you said, and he had his own famous ancestor. Wasn't a grandfather, a great-grandfather, a prominent judge or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was his great-great-grandfather was the governor of Rhode Island, the second governor of Rhode Island, and very wealthy man. The family was quite prominent in Rhode Island, and through the generations, and every generation there was a Benedict Arnold, their fortune tended to dissipate, as it often happens. And by the time it got down to the Benedict Arnold that's famous, his father was actually a sort of a working class man who did do quite well for a while and then became an alcoholic, and the family fell on hard times. So Benedict Arnold had to himself become an apprentice. So he started his life as an apprentice.
How did he become a soldier?
One of the interesting things, Bob, that people often ask me is Benedict Arnold had virtually no military training whatsoever, and no experience to speak of when the Revolutionary War broke out. So how was it that he seemed to have these instincts for tactics and strategy that were quite remarkable and quite successful? And I attribute it to the fact that, as his father had done, he had developed a trading business and owned his own ships, and he had gone with his father down to the West Indies on these trading voyages, and then he started serving as a captain of his own ships and going to the West Indies, going occasionally to London, up into Canada to trade. To be a ship's captain in those days, you had to be a pretty tough character. There was piracy, there was violent, a lot of violence down in the West Indies and various ports that you would run into. You had to command your crew because they could commit mutiny and throw you overboard. So he developed the instincts of a military officer by being a ship's captain. Mm. And I think also, you know, you had a plan. You had to look out what was coming and try to gather intelligence and so forth, in as he did in his business. And then he was able to apply that over to his military career.
Why was he attracted to the rebel cause when America revolted against Britain?
Well, I think part of it, at least, was that he was involved with the with trade and on the waterfront. A lot of the initial agitation, right down to the Boston Tea Party, was these waterfront people who were most affected by the British taxes and the closing of the port of Boston, for example. They were severely affected and immediately affected by those things. And Arnold was in that category. He was much of his career in the later part of his trading career. He was actually a smuggler, because everybody had to be a smuggler because of the British taxes and the mm-hmm. impositions that the British put on American trade. So that's how he got interested in it. And the one thing that was true of Benedict Arnold throughout his entire career, he never did anything by halves. When he went into something, he went in wholeheartedly. And so when he embraced the patriot cause, he became a super patriot, and he was really one of the most gung-ho of the advocates of revolution in the early part of the, just after Lexington and Concord, that understood that this was a war and we needed to prepare and we needed to fight it. Whereas Congress, even at that time, even after Lexington and Concord, was still hoping for reconciliation with Britain. And that went on, of course, until 1776, when they finally decided to declare independence.
Arnold was involved in capturing Fort Ticonderoga here in New York State. What happened there?
Well, I think that's a good example of his achievements, and also the way that his later treason distorted history, because we don't hear too much about the capture of Ticonderoga, even though it was one of the most crucial military operations of the entire war. Only 3 weeks after Lexington and Concord, he was on his way up to Ticonderoga to raise a regiment and capture that fort that was crucial to protecting the colonies from an invasion from Canada. And he was able to do that with the help of the Green Mountain Boys, which was a vigilante group from up in the Vermont, what would later become the Vermont area, and Ethan Allen, who was their leader. But the idea for it was Benedict Arnold, and the leadership was Benedict Arnold. And even more important, I think, was the fact that he was able to go up into Canada, capture the only British warship on the lake, and thereby secured Lake Champlain for the Patriots. That combination of actions very early in the war protected the Americans from the main British strategic objective, which was to come down from Canada, capture Ticonderoga, Lake George, and then down the Hudson River to New York, sort of a super highway of waterway that ran down through the colonies. And they thought that would split the colonies, isolate New England, and win the war for them, which very well could have. But holding Ticonderoga prevented that from happening.
In these early years, 1775, 76, did he get on with George Washington, or did George Washington, like, hire him to be in the army, or was he more a militia man?
He was, when he originally... The day after the news of Lexington and Concord arrived in New Haven, which is where he lived, he had already organized a militia company, a relatively small company, marched immediately up to Cambridge, where the Patriots were besieging the British in Boston. And Washington hadn't even arrived there yet. He had just barely been appointed to, as commander-in-chief. And Arnold went out on the authority of the Massachusetts committees up there, went out to take over Ticonderoga. When he finally did meet Washington, which was later in 1775, Washington immediately recognized he was extremely capable and aggressive and just a smart officer. Made him a colonel in the Continental Army, immediately sent him on an expedition up to Canada. The Patriots had invaded Canada. And always after that, Washington and Benedict Arnold only met occasionally, but they were quite close when they did meet. And I think Washington really trusted Arnold almost as much as anybody. And in the colonies as a whole, or the new United States as it was then, Benedict Arnold was almost as famous as Washington, with one achievement after another in the early years of the war. So they were both celebrity generals.
Now we come to 1777, the British Army led by John Burgoyne coming down from Canada, and there are several battles in and around Saratoga and Schuylerville. And this is where Benedict Arnold kind of plays his most important role in terms of the American Revolution?
I think that the first really crucial role was the year before in 1776 when he fought at Valcour Island. I'm quite familiar with that because I wrote a book about it called Valcour. And that campaign, which went on all the summer of 1776, stopped the initial British invasion down the lake. They couldn't invade until they built up a fleet of warships. That took all summer and into the fall. And so by the time they did get down to Ticonderoga, it was too late. And that was all the result of Benedict Arnold's strategy and then his fighting the British on the lake. So that was the first thing. The American fleet that he had put together to oppose the British was largely destroyed in 1776. So that when we get to 1777, Lake Champlain was under the control of the British, and they came down and easily took Fort Ticonderoga. And this was an enormous threat to the Revolution. The Burgoyne was on his way down to Albany. If they captured Albany and got control of the Hudson River, it would have been a very bad situation for the Patriots. So Horatio Gates, who was the commander in charge in the north, and Benedict Arnold together decided to stand up to make a stand against Burgoyne on the high ground just south of the village of Saratoga, which is now, the name was changed to Schuylerville. And that was referred to as Bemis Heights. And that was where they fought the Battle of Saratoga, which is considered really one of the most crucial battles of the entire war.
And in that battle, Arnold was badly wounded in the leg. In fact, there's this famous monument to his leg up at the Saratoga battlefield. And this bothered him the rest of his life.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, he'd been wounded earlier during the invasion of Canada in the same leg. This time, they took a bullet into his shin bone, they think, and that was usually meant amputation because they had no way to repair something like that. He refused amputation, but his leg was never completely healed and was shorter than one. He limped around for the rest of his life. and very traumatic, as you can imagine, the pain, and there wasn't too much they could do about pain at those in those days. But that was in the process of being wounded. He was almost entirely in command of the effort to break through the British lines and put General Burgoyne in a situation which he said he would never do, which was to retreat. And while Benedict Arnold was being sent off to the hospital, Burgoyne began to retreat, was trapped in just north of Saratoga, and then had to surrender his entire army. Time magazine, in around the time of the millennium, said that the Battle of Saratoga was the most important battle anywhere in the world in the last 1,000 years. It was usually called the turning point of the Revolutionary War. So, and it was really Benedict Arnold's fighting ability that turned the tide there. I give a lot of credit to General Gates as well for setting up the defenses against de Burgoyne. But when it came down to the actual crux of the matter and the actual fighting, Benedict Arnold was largely the responsible for it.
As you know, we recently had Jim Kaplan on, who covers New York City stories for us, and he thinks that Gates didn't get enough credit for the victory at Saratoga. But anyway, his main goal, I think, Kaplan, is to point out that Gates survived the war. A lot of people think he didn't, but he ended up being in New York City and was kind of prominent there after a while.
Yeah, Gates was one of the things I love about history, Bob, is that nothing is black and white, and there's many very interesting characters who are somewhat ambiguous, and Gates was one of them. He was a great general at Saratoga. They sent him down to take care of the situation in the South, and he was badly defeated and retreated for a couple hundred miles, which was seemed like a lot of retreating. And his reputation went up, and then it went down. And he ended up the war. He also tended to think that he might be a better commander of the Continental Army than Washington, and at various times may or may not have plotted to replace Washington. So by the end of the war, his reputation was down. But I think he contributed particularly at Saratoga, and deserves the credit that he was due.
So what happens to Benedict Arnold after Saratoga? He ends up going to Philadelphia. He marries, his first wife died. He marries a young loyalist woman. He doesn't like being in Philadelphia, does he?
Yeah. Many people consider that Washington, who was usually very, very astute in placing people and dealing with his subordinates, that Washington made one of his few mistakes in sending Benedict Arnold to Philadelphia, because it was mainly an administrative position. The British had taken over Philadelphia in 1777 and then decided to abandon it a year later, and so the Americans were taking it back, and the city had gone very, very swung over to the loyalist side when the British were there, and now they had to reestablish the Patriot control of the city. And he thought, well, Benedict Arnold, he's laid up. He couldn't go back to lead troops in the field. This would be a good assignment for him. But it turned out that Arnold, one of the things I noticed about Arnold throughout his career was that when he was in action, he seemed to be very comfortable, and he knew he made the right decisions. When he was idle, he tended to get in trouble, and he didn't get along with people. He was very abrasive character, very thin-skinned himself, and he was looking out for his own interests, as many people were in the Revolution.
Eventually, he's sent to command West Point, which at the time is an important fort on the Hudson River, and that's when he basically decides to become a trader.
Yes, he was in command of the lower Hudson Valley, including West Point, and he decided to give the fort at West Point, which was a very crucial fort, over to the British.
Arnold tries to get to the, or in, succeeds in getting to the British side?
Yes, after the plot was foiled and Arnold went down the Hudson River to a British ship and joined the British in New York City, and fought for them as a brigadier general in the British Army for about a year or so.
And in fact, he burned a Connecticut town. He's from Connecticut. What was that?
Yeah, that was kind of ironic, because they sent him up to raid the town of New London, which was a major port up there, and that was only a few miles from where he'd been born. And he not only burned the town, but there was a fort which they took over. There was a massacre of the prisoners. He wasn't directly responsible for that, but it was turned out to be the last major battle of the Revolutionary War in the North before Yorktown.
He lived in Canada for a while and was also back in England, and he died in London, right?
Yeah, he never set foot in America again after he went to England and spent about 6 years in Canada. He died when he was 60 years old, so it was around 1801. He lived a pretty rough life and had a lot of ailments by that time.
Well, Jack, again, I've talked to people who really enjoyed your book and your writing about this. Maybe I sort of know, but what do you mean by the title, God Save Benedict Arnold?
Well, I have a little story, kind of a historical what if in the book, as to what if Benedict Arnold, who wanted to serve in the American Navy, and was never given the opportunity, that if he had been in the Navy, he might have not had these moments of idleness that turned into treason, and he would have been a hero, and we would have been saying, God save America, God save Benedict Arnold. But I think it's also the idea that he was a hero, he was a villain, and leave the judgment to others and just look at who he was. So that's why I said, let God sort it out.
Well, I'm going to make a judgment here. I would say it's probably yours is the most prominent one, Jack Kelly, but there are other authors and filmmakers who are kind of reviving the story of Benedict Arnold, trying to flesh it out. How do you account for that?
I think he's being recognized as one of the most interesting characters of that era. Whether you like him or don't like him, he did tremendous things for the Revolution and for the Patriot cause before he then turned and committed treason. So. There's been a reevaluation of a lot of people in history, and it's one of the great things about history. It's always changing, and we're always seeing things differently.
In fact, maybe you said this at the beginning, but if people remember anything or any name from the American Revolutionary War period, they remember Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, I mean, that's, in a way, that's a kind of a sad commentary that we remember the traitor, but there's so many people that were great heroes of the Revolution that have largely been forgotten. You know, if you talk about Nathaniel Greene or Henry Knox, a lot of people have scratched their head, but Benedict Arnold, everybody knows him.
So again, you're not making excuses for him. You're saying he did commit treason, but that for years has been all we know about Benedict Arnold.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't in any way exonerate him. I think that in many ways his treason was worse than people think, because he not only betrayed the country, betrayed the people that he'd fought with and who trusted him in the army, including, you know, and especially George Washington. You know, it was just a personal betrayal. It was not a good thing, and I don't condone or try to lessen that, but I feel that one story I often tell is that the redemption story. And somebody, if you're playing baseball and you hit strike out three times and then hit a home run at the bottom of the ninth, you redeem yourself. If you hit the home run at the first inning and then strike out three times, you're the mutt of the game. So Benedict Arnold turned out to be the mutt just because of the timing of his heroism came first and then his treason. So that's left him as the reputation he has today.
Our guest on the Historians Podcast, Jack Kelly, author of God Save Benedict Arnold.
Every week, an added feature, part of the Historians Podcast with Bob Cudmore. 10 years, 500 episodes. Anyway, the history mystery for today, a little mystery from, I was going to say, past history. No kidding. All right, here we go. General Benedict Arnold lived during the American Revolution. Now, which came first? Now, you got dozens and dozens to choose from, but we'll just go with a few of them. Which came first, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, or the Russian Revolution? The answer in just a second or two.
Thank you, Dave. We've now produced over 500 episodes of the Historians Podcast. Would you be willing to pay 10 cents, a tenth part of a dollar, for each episode? That would be a donation of $50. Please contribute that or any amount to our online campaign. You get there by going to our website, bobcudmore.com. Look for the blue button that takes you to our GoFundMe campaign. Or you can go old-fashioned, write it out a check. Send a check made out to me, Bob Cudmore, to 125 Horstman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. We need to raise over $2,000 by December 31st. Have about a month left to do this if we're going to reach our $7,000 goal for 2023. Now back to the history mystery. Benedict Arnold lived during the American Revolution. Which came first? The American Revolution, the French Revolution, or the Russian Revolution? The correct answer is the American Revolution, which took place from 1775 through 1783. The French Revolution was right behind. The French Revolution took place from 1789 until 1794. The Russian Revolution did not begin until 1917. Thanks to writer and historian Jack Kelly for joining us today to discuss his book, God Save Benedict Arnold. The Historians Podcast is produced by Dave Green. I'm Bob Cudmore.